Very glad that you're here tonight. We are blessed, and I enjoyed seeing all the families that are growing and lined up here on the platform. And I told my wife when we went home, I said, that didn't look like a dying church to me. And so we're very glad. It's interesting, I was greeting at the back door, and I think I've shared this with some of you, but a guy, he was in the Matthews family, and he was, I don't know, I think he was visiting today, I'm not sure, but that he was four, he could have been five, but he came through, and he gave me a skunk eye, and he said, well, thank you for running down the kids today. So. Anyway, not everybody likes the sermon, you know. I want to read to you from Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. We've been looking at the Ten Commandments, and again, it would be hard to understate the importance of the Ten Commandments in discussing God's moral law. It would certainly be the foundation of God's moral law, and probably any law that he gives in the Bible could be traced back to an explanation, a larger explanation of one of these commands. So we're looking at the first part, which relate specifically to man's relationship with God. And in verse 7, the Lord speaks to Moses and tells the people through Moses, tells Moses to write this on the tablet. He says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord is not will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Now, I think one of the areas that Christianity differs maybe with Judaism on, and you could probably argue that the Jewish faith might be more biblical than the Christian faith, is in regards to the holiness of the name of God. I know, and I think Judaism is like Christianity. You have conservative Judaism, you have Orthodox, which is tends to be maybe even more conservative than conservatives. You have liberal Judaism, but at least in conservative Judaism, the name of God is extremely holy. They go to great extremes in general to protect the name of God. As I understand it, and again, this can vary from time to place, but at least there was a time when the temple was still standing, as I understand it, that the name of God, Yahweh, could only be uttered by the high priest in the temple on Yom Kippur. That's how holy the name was. And as I understand it, Orthodox Jews tend to use the word Adonai instead of Yahweh, or the primary name of God, because I think Adonai means my master or my Lord, and they're more comfortable using the word Adonai than Yahweh. The protection of the name of God is very important in Judaism. Now, on the other hand, in Christianity, we tend to be fairly free with the name of God, and I think that's because there's probably a more grace base in Christianity. We see our relationship with God as more relational, and so we sense some freedoms with God that perhaps a Jewish individual would not. But I think it's also true that we perhaps go too far and do not sanctify the name of God as we should. Because remember, in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus gives the Lord's Prayer and he says, you ought to pray, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed or holy is your name. Set apart, sanctified is your name. Now, I think that means more than his name, but again, it can't mean less than his name. It's like in Romans chapter 12 when it talks about giving your body as a living sacrifice. Body probably means more than body, but it can't mean less than your body. And I think if you say hallowed is the name of God, it probably means more. It probably means the entire person of God. I think that is almost definitely what it means, but that would include the name of God. Now, what are some ways in which we would be tempted not to hallow the name of God or to use his name in vain? And as I understand it, the word vain in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it means to use it meaninglessly. And but when you talk about hallowed be your name, I think that even enlarges upon the ideal. And so it's not just using it in a meaningless way, but it's not making it holy in general. What are some ways that we would be perhaps tempted to do that? I think one way, which is the obvious way, is to misuse his name. I think the people, and we have it in our culture, and I'm repulsed by it. I think you ought to be repulsed by it. When people use the phrase GD, OMG, a person might say, and I'm quoting here, Jesus Christ, in a way that expresses annoyance, and it's a byword for them. I think you could take all of the ways that we reference God as a byword. That is using his name in vain. You don't need to use it. And I think that, by the way, I think that's a good way to know if you have used his name in vain. Could you have said it without using his name? Did you really need to say GD? Could you have made your point without using his name? Could you have expressed your frustration without bringing him into it? Could you have said, I'm surprised? Why couldn't you have just said, I'm surprised? Why would it have to be OMG? You're using his name when you don't need to use his name. And so in that sense, you're misusing his name. You're using it in vain. You don't need to use it, but you use it. Now, why would God be concerned about the misuse of his name? And I think you could ask the question to you and I, why would we be upset with the misuse of our name? You know, it's interesting how protective we are of our name. Have you ever been in a place and maybe there's noise, and so you're sort of in this conversation, and on the other side of the room, there's people talking, and you don't know what they're talking about, but you heard your name used. How do you feel about that? I mean, you desperately want to know in what context your name is being used. You just, I mean, if you could leave, and if it was socially appropriate, you'd leave where you're at, you say, hold on 1 second, I just heard my name. What's all this about? You know, I don't want you to use my name, and I want to know what context, if you did use it, that you used it in. We are protective of our names. We don't like our name shortened often, and we oftentimes don't like our name doctored with, do we? I remember as a kid, name's Nathan. And it was either my dad's name was Ronald Edward, and so I got the Ronald, so I'm Ronald Nathan. And it was either go by my middle name or be Little Ronnie. That's what it would have been. So I went Nathan, but a lot of people called me Nat. They could have said Nate, which would have been a little hipper, but Nat, that's a bug. It's a little bug, and that's worse than being called Little Ronnie, really Little Ronnie, the Gnat. I took great offense to that. I had a friend whose name was Michael, and there would be tenseness and tightness when I called him Mikey. So took it poorly when I called him Mikey. The name ought to be hallowed. Name ought to be hallowed. The way you refer to a person does say something about what you think of that person. It's interesting that before a person goes in to see the president, I don't know with President Trump, but because he's broken a lot of rules and probably changed a lot of rules we don't know about so far, but when you go see the president, as I understand it, you're briefed on how you talk to the president. I mean, I don't think you can go into the Oval Office and say, "Hey, Donnie boy, how's it going?" I think that there's probably a law about that. As I understand, there's a protocol, and they say when you go in, it's Mr. President. You need to call him Mr. President. That's the reference. And you can't go in there with heavy familiarity. That is disregarding his position and his title. I think it's a lot worse if you go see the Queen of England. I think, and I don't even know the title, but you got to get the title right, apparently. And they might even give you a card. It's so-and-so, Her Royal Highness, and there's a lot of stuff you got to say when you go in there. And I remember when LeBron James, the basketball player, when William and Kate came over there, it was a major faux pas because he went up and put his arm around her like they were friends, and it's like, no, you can't touch a crown prince, you can't do that, this is a terrible thing, and it was a scandalous for him to even touch her in a friendly way, but highly inappropriate for a person of her stature in England. How you approach people, how you talk about them, how you use their name does say something about what you think of them. Does say something about it. So it says, don't misuse my name. Misuse my name. I think we can also non-hallow the name of God in misrepresenting him with his name. In other words, you can just misuse the name. You can use it when you don't need to. You can demean it. You can show in the use of the name a lack of proper respect. But you can also misrepresent him. And in that case, that's not hallowing his name. I remember Dave Ramsey, who's the financial guy that's popular around the church. And one of Dave Ramsey's big issues is that you ought not go into debt. He's, you know, adamant that you ought not use credit cards. And so he's, you know, cut up your credit cards, pay them off, cut them up. It would be Dave Ramsey's advice. But he was buying a washer and dryer a few years ago, and he goes in there, and the salesman is trying to sell him a credit card. And Dave Ramsey, you know, is trying to be nice. But then the salesman says, well, listen, this credit card is endorsed by Dave Ramsey. He knows his name, but he doesn't know what he looks like. And so, of course, he got the manager involved. It was a big to-do that you would use my name, that you would misrepresent me in that way. There's a place in Deuteronomy 18, verse 18, where, if you've got it there, Andrew, it says, I will raise up, this is God speaking, I will raise up from them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and he will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command, and it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. But the prophet who presumes to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or who speaks in the name of the other gods, that prophet shall die. And you see how then serious it is to God that you not say that he said something that he didn't say. It's extremely serious that he be quoted correctly. Remember the guy... many of you will remember the name of the guy who went on TV many years ago and said the Lord had told him that he was going to kill him unless he raised $7 million in a certain amount of time, big college out west. You remember that guy? That would be, I think, the first time God ever told a guy that he was going to kill him unless he could get $7 million through profusely begging people on TV to send it in. And I take it that is pretty serious to God to misquote him in that way. My sister was single longer than my other two. I have a younger sister who didn't get married till her late 30s, and I can remember a couple guys who told her that God had told them they were supposed to get married. And she's not married to either one of those guys. But I don't know that I don't think that's a small thing to say, the Lord told me to tell you to marry me. And you're quoting him, you're putting words in his mouth. It's false prophecy. Saying that he said something that he didn't say. And it's not, again, a small issue. I hear preachers sometime, and I know it's effective rhetorically to say, the Lord just told me to tell you. But I think you've got to be careful about that. Be careful about phrasing it that way. You've got to be absolutely sure it's the Lord and not indigestion that told you to say that. Be careful about that. I have a pastor, a friend who's probably more of a mentor. And we were talking once, and he was an associate pastor for many years under a pastor who was in a very large church and a highly respected pastor. He said, but I was allowed as an associate pastor to sit in with this esteemed elder pastor during some counseling sessions. When there would be conflict in the church, he would allow me to sit in and see how it was handled. And he said, I always wanted to yell at him because this person would be pouring out this injustice done. This person did this to me in the church, and they've said this about me, and it's hurt, and it's caused me to have these feelings. I don't know that I even want to go to this church. And so they're really pouring out the effects of this issue. And he said this older pastor would just sit there with his head down and say, oh, that's terrible. Boy, we need to pray about that. Oh, that's awful. And he said, I'm sitting there saying, do something. Help them. Say, I feel your pain and I'm going to do something about it. He said, and I always thought he was so inactive, he would just sit there and say, oh, it's awful. It's terrible. We've got to pray about that. He said, I confronted him on that once. And I said, why is it that when people come for counseling, you never actually counsel them? And he said, you got to understand how people work. He said, the people that you're referring to, they want a word from me so they can go back and quote me and say, even the pastor thinks you're wrong. He said, and you got to understand with pastoral counseling, about half of it is people fishing for your word so that they can use it against the people they don't like. He said, you got to be careful about giving them that word. What's he saying? He's saying, people have a tendency to try to get something by using the word of an authority figure. And oftentimes people do that with God. The Lord told me to say this. The Lord told me to get up and say this. Well, I don't... Really? Really? Is everybody who testifies, is every word spoken under the name of the Lord, is that really from the Lord? Again, if it's not, you're tempting him. You're tempting him. Remember what he said, I shall not hold them guiltless who say it came from the Lord when it did not. You can misrepresent God. I think there's another way that you can non-hallow the name of God. I don't think that's in the dictionary. I don't think that's a word, non-hallow, but you understand what it means, right? You can non-hallow the Lord's name. You can misuse it, you can misrepresent his name, but you can also, I think, merchandise his name. Merchandise his name. Oftentimes when people look at Jesus driving the money changers out of the temple, they say, see, that's against merchandising. You shouldn't sell things in the church. I think that particular passage is probably bigger than that. I think, as I understand the situation, the money changers were taking advantage of people. The temple would have laws where you could only offer a sacrifice, or you could only buy a sacrifice with Hebrew money, as I understand the situation. So you show up, you need to offer a sacrifice. There's a place in the temple that sells the sacrifices, but they'll only take Hebrew money. And so, you know, to change your Roman money into Hebrew money, they would charge a surplus. So essentially, they were jacking the prices up on people that didn't have the right money to buy those issues. And so I think in that sense, they're making it difficult for people to worship God. I think that's the issue there. I don't think it's necessarily that you ought not be able to sell anything inside of the church. But having said that, it does seem to be wrong to sell things using the name of God. Doesn't seem to be something right about that. And in fact, legally in America, you can't do that with probably any other name but God. I mean, if you think about it, if I wanted to go into the construction game, and I know nothing about construction, but I think it's a great way to make money. You know, a great ideal to drum up business for me, it would be to name my company the Raymond Shelton Construction Company. Because he's worked around here for lo these many years building up a great reputation. Just name it after somebody who's got a great reputation. They don't know that I'm not Raymond Shelton. I can say Raymond's been on vacation for a year. I build the house. That'd be a great ideal if I wasn't certain I'd get sued by Raymond Shelton. Using his name, you can't use my name to sell your stuff. I read an article the other day that said most of the buildings in the world that have the name Trump on them aren't owned by Donald Trump. They are buildings that have a licensing agreement with Donald Trump. So Donald Trump has this grand reputation for building high-quality buildings, and people will come and say, for a price, can we put your name on our building, that this is a Donald Trump-approved building? And he'll either sell the right to his name or he'll give it to you for a piece of the profit. And with his name on the building, the condos will sell for higher because it's a Trump-approved building. But you just can't slap his name on any building without paying him for it, or you're going to get sued. There is a sense in which even legally you can't use somebody else's name to sell your merchandise, because we intuitively know there's something wrong with that. But oftentimes, I think as Christians, and I see this becoming more and more of a thing in America, that Christianity or the name of God is used to hawk products that he has no interest in. I remember in North Carolina, there's a big billboard outside of Hickory that advertised this car lot as your Christian car lot. I thought, man, I hope they sell good cars. I read this article this week, actually. It says, what would Jesus sell? What would Jesus sell? And let me just read to you about a minute and a half of it. It says, in Denver, the fake rose petals strewn across the tablecloth gave Milton Hobbs' booth a romantic aura. He stacked crystal-cut perfume flask in a pyramid and set out pink candles tied with ribbon. The effect was almost sexy, at least compared with the other booths at the International Christian Retail Show. Hobbs liked it. He needed a striking display to call attention to his most unusual product, Christian perfume, he said. It is a really, really new genre. We're the first. Virtuous women perfume comes packaged with a passage from Proverbs, but what makes the floral fragrance distinctively Christian, Hop says, is that it's supposed to be a tool of evangelism. It should be enticing enough to provoke questions. What are you wearing, Hop says, and then you take the opportunity to speak of your faith. They've opened the door, and now they're going to get it. More than 400 vendors packed the Colorado Convention Center last week to showcase the latest accessories for the Christian lifestyle. There were acres of predictable books, CDs, greeting cards, inspirational artwork, stuffed animals wearing Jesus Loves You t-shirts. Many of the newest items, however, put a religious twist on unexpected products marketed as a means to reach the unsuspecting and unsaved. And you're going to like this one here. Gospel golf balls are touted as a great golf ball with a greater purpose. Manufactured by Top Flight, the golf balls are printed with well-known verses from the Bible, such as John 3:16. David Cruz, president of Revelation, said they were meant as conversation starters to help men share their faith while teeing up. An added bonus is this. Duffers no longer need to feel bad about losing a ball in the rough. Because if you're playing great, good, Cruz said, but if you're spraying the ball well, losing a golf ball is the same as sharing the gospel. I mean, think about that. It's a $4 billion business. Don't have to feel bad about hitting it in the rough. Leave it there. You might get somebody saved. Think about that. Is God in the golf ball business? Is he in the perfume business? At what point are you not hallowing and making holy the name of God when you slap it on every piece of junk you think you can sell with his name on it? So I think, again, for me, there's three ways that you would not hallow the name and really take his name in vain or make it something meaningless. You can misuse it. You can misrepresent it. But you can also merchandise it. If you misuse his name, you're attacking his person. If you misrepresent his name, you're really attacking his character. But if you merchandise his name, you're really attacking his mission. Because Jesus Christ didn't come to sell golf balls, and he didn't come to sell fragrances. I mean, can you imagine Jesus? I mean, really, can you honestly see him holding the Greater Galilean Crusade, the healing crusade, and I'm going to preach to you, and I'm going to share with you, and we're going to do a little healing. And Peter and John, they have a little booth over here for those of you looking for a God fragrance or golf ball, and we got all kinds of canes over there. Can you see Jesus doing stuff like that? It's not his mission. Come to get rich. He didn't need to get rich. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He didn't come to sell trinkets. The question is do you and I misrepresent his name when we use his name to sell trinkets that he would never have sold? I think that's the third command. Honor his name. Keep it holy. It's a holy name. Don't use it when you don't have to. Don't misuse his name. Don't misrepresent it. And please, don't merchandise it. Do not take his name in vain. Amen. Will you stand with me tonight?